Peace and blessings. My name is William Weston, the Communications Chair and Vice President of the Willingboro and Vicinity NAACP Branch, and I'm here with
Samantha Whitfield, President of the Willingboro and Vicinity NAACP Branch.
Yes, it's been quite a while since we've been on these mics.
It has been a minute.
True. Hopefully we're sounding good to everybody out there. We're taking time to work on our technical issues, and to everybody listening, we really appreciate it.
And we're here to bring you the latest news of what's going on with the NAACP in our world.
Yes. There's a lot of things going on, as always, in the world of civil rights. It never stops. Can you believe that?
Not only doesn't it stop, but the causes to fight seem to be increasing. What year is this happening?
In 2019.
Yes. Census questions, border,
gerrymandering, there's all manner of issues out there.
Lots and lots of
that
things
need to be addressed and brought to light so people can take action. And if you aren't doing anything, please join your local NAACP branch.
And to do that, you can register online by going to the website www.naacp.org. But let's just jump right into it.
All right.
Topics for today.
Yes. Supreme Court gerrymandering, allowing gerrymandering to continue.
Yo, that's crazy. Because I never would have thought that we would still be facing voter suppression and election rigging in 2019.
Yes.
But yeah, gerrymandering is real. It's a real thing. And for those of you who don't know, gerrymandering is the redistricting and drawing of district lines that will be in the favor of a particular party. So in this case, it is highly favoring the Republican Party, even though, disclaimer, the NAACP is a nonpartisan organization. But we do stand up for civil rights and social justice. And this is a civil rights issue for voters.
Definitely. So on June 27th, the Supreme Court ruled 5-4 that federal courts must stay out of disputes over when politicians go too far in drawing district lines for partisan gain. And I believe this ruling endorses and promotes voter disenfranchisement.
Yes.
President and CEO of the NAACP, Derek Johnson, released a statement concerning this ruling. I'm going to read part of it. The court's rulings today upend our democratic principles by allowing party politics to determine the outcomes of our elections. Extreme partisan gerrymandering has infected our electoral process for far too long. Exercise of the franchise, which many fought and even died for, must not be reduced to a political charade in which the outcomes are predetermined. In America, voters should choose their representatives instead of representatives choosing their voters.
Yeah, and if you even look at a map of the United States with the districts in it, some of the districts that you see drawn don't even make sense. Like, they're so skewed towards one party. You can physically see it on the map where it's just the lines. You can tell there's some shady business going on with the drawing of the lines. And it's not just because the lines are drawn that way. This is purposeful, intentional, and systematic oppression of the people and suppression of the votes. So we need to make sure that we are keeping an eye out for gerrymandering by our elected officials, especially leading up to the 2020 election. This is crucial. This is going to be a crucial, crucial election where we need every vote to count. We need it to be fair, bottom line.
Yes.
And with some of these procedures and things that the Supreme Court is even passing, it is looking like they're taking those steps to rig it from the inside out.
Well, at the end of the day, as you know, elections should be fair. This should be a moot issue.
The question is moot.
Districts should be drawn fairly and not strongholds of power.
Right. And we did. So as the NAACP organization, there was a town hall conference call on election security, which took place on June 19th. And there were a couple of heavy hitter speakers that were present on the call. So, of course, our national president, Derek Johnson, was on the call, as well as author, economist, and civil rights leader, Dr. Julianne Malvaro. Dr. Nicole Turner Lee from the Brookings Institute, Cheryl Conti, who is the chair of the Netroots Nation Board of Directors, and also Malcolm Nance, who spoke beautifully about some of the tactics and things surrounding election security that he's experienced himself.
He also wrote a book fully titled The Plot to Betray America: How Team Trump Embraced Our Enemies, Compromised Our Security, and How We Can Fix It.
He was an awesome, awesome speaker on the call, and just his stories were very powerful, and how even social media is being used as a tactic to break down the walls of security around our elections.
Well, here's a clip of some of the things that Malcolm Nance stated at the town hall.
The word is not out there that people have the ability to change our minds and to literally make us work and vote against ourselves, or take activities against ourselves through the use of conspiracy theories and blatant, outright, non-quantifiable, fact-checkable lies. And I mean, we literally have a commander-in-chief right now who is a master of that. And those people, and there are people out there who will believe this to the day that they die. This is what I'm saying about our hygiene is bad, because we don't teach people or confront people to immediately say, no, what you have heard is a lie. It is wrong. It's disinformation.
So we need to pay particular attention. We must not allow our community to be treated as a political football or as a target of race baiting and other discord. So we just need to stay diligent, stay active, and make sure that your branch has an initiative around voter rights, around addressing voter suppression, and voter mobilization as we lead up to the 2020 election.
And there's not only the national elections, but also the local races, which can have a great impact on your local community.
No doubt. That's what affects us directly.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that you're looking out for some of those tactics, even within your own municipality, your own city, because it starts at the lowest level, and that's how it can even get to the highest scale. These aren't new things that they're trying. These are age-old tactics, and we just have to be diligent in being the defenders of our democracy.
Yes, and now I just want to read this quote from Eric Holder. History will not be kind in its assessment of the ways in which this court has undermined voting rights and core democratic principles in America.
Amen to that.
Yes, amen to that, because we are told we live in a democracy and these practices are purely undemocratic.
So let your voice be heard, stand up, get out, and take action.
And of course, vote, vote, yeah. Vote.
But as many of you know, one of the most pressing issues facing our people is the prison industrial complex. Alarming rates of incarceration in our community. And when we see that, you know that there are other things going on behind the doors. So here in South Jersey, actually in Burlington City, New Jersey, we had a salvation and social justice event hosted by the New Jersey State Conference and
The Salvation and Social Justice Organization.
But the event was surrounding police use of force, and there is a website that details all of the accounts of use of force within New Jersey and some of the municipalities. All I can say is, my goodness.
Goodness.
Like, y'all don't really care about us at all. And the police are out here just treating us foul, doing us dirty, because the use of force is crazy. Now, what I will say is it just counts the overall use of force.
Okay, so you're saying it doesn't differentiate between justified uses of force and unjustified uses of force.
Yeah, but it is all types of use of force. Pepper spray, dogs.
Restraints.
Any of that. Any type of use of force, it counts.
Okay, well, when I looked up Willingboro in the force report, it came in about in the middle for the state. There were 228 total uses of force from 2012 to 2016. And if you want to look up your local police department in the force report, the website is force.nj.com. That's force.nj.com. And you can search by police department or you can search by officer, and it gives some pretty detailed information. And that's force.nj.com.
And I will say this project is really amazing. The people that took the time to open all of the documents that were used to be able to create the website, but it definitely should serve as a model for other states to be able to assess their use of force. So head over to force.nj.com.
Yes.
And check it out. Check it out and see if you can replicate it just to get the stats within your state.
And I would just like to mention something said by Reverend Charles Boyer, the founder of Salvation and Social Justice, that these are just the reported uses of force. So anything that didn't make it into paperwork is not in a report.
Yeah. One of the most powerful things at the event, I think, and Will, I mean, I don't know if it was as impactful for you, which I'm sure it was, but were the testimonies. Man, there were some really heart-wrenching testimonies of people who shared their story of police use of force within our own area, within our own jurisdiction that our branch covers. And, sometimes they don't report it and they don't bring it to us. So I was glad that we were a part of the conversation so that we can actually hear what's going on the ground and offer ourselves and our services as the NAACP to be able to support and bring an end to the police use of force or the improper police use of force within our area. One of the most, I think, impactful testimonies for me was Brother Jay Sykes, who shared his story. Young man, he's no older than 30, I would say, but a young man who, you know, had got out of being incarcerated, turned his life around, was doing really well, and then, you know, was picked up for like a ticket or something like that, some minor traffic violation, and taken to the county jail, which, wow, they're doing some mess in there. And we've also decided to work with our sister branch, Southern Burlington County NAACP, on preparing or setting up a meeting with the Burlington County Jail to address some of the concerns that were brought to light at that event.
And here's a clip of some of Reverend Boyer's comments after some of the testimonies.
And think about the brothers who were put in the county facility. We see over and over again black folks being incarcerated even for short periods of time for very minor things. And all of these constant interactions with law enforcement and this living in a police state contribute to why use of force is prevalent in our communities. I just want to give one note too. I think a piece that was left out of the data, and one of the brothers stated this, some of the worst use of force was actually not in majority black cities. It was in surrounding white towns, which surround black urban centers. And so, and the brother said about the gentrification, there is an issue of trying to protect and keep black folks out of these majority white towns that we see taking place. And that's where we see some of the most egregious incidents of use of force.
And these incidents occur all through Burlington County, so it impacts the three branches in the county: the Greater Delaware Valley, Southern Burlington County, and Willingboro vicinity. So we can all unite to fight for human rights.
Absolutely. I guess lastly, what I'd say, the last word on that, is it's not necessarily a race issue with this police use of force. This is a nationwide police issue that needs to be addressed. It's not just about black, white, because some of these issues, one woman, Shayla Reed, shared her testimony of her son, Jerome Reed, who was shot by the police in Bridgeton, New Jersey. But he was shot by a black officer.
Yes.
Yeah, so it definitely needs to be addressed. And it's not a race issue, because, you know, this is, that could be counted as the black on black crime. Okay, so
yeah. Well, it's that blue line, and that police have the, I'm going to say, audacity to behave a certain way with no accountability. But one of the things that shocked me, that oftentimes, at least I would hear about things that are happening nationwide, but these are things that are happening in Burlington County. And especially the things that were happening at Burlington County Jail. I know Steve Young, president of the National Action Network South Jersey chapter, I know they're trying to go into Burlington County Jail and see the treatment, you know, allow people to see what is really going on and how they're treating those who are held there. And that's one thing that I would like to be part of, that to see. Because no matter what you did, what you have done, or why are you being held, you should be treated as a human. Like, this goes beyond Absolutely. Civil rights, but human rights.
Absolutely.
Like, hey, you're innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
And even if you're guilty, there's a way to be treated and respected as a human.
No doubt. We should feel safest when we're around police. I mean, they're literal. Duty is to protect and serve the people. But when it comes to us and our communities, it oftentimes feels the exact opposite. You know, there's no greater point of fear than when a cop pulls up behind you. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if you're going to make it out alive, or something's going to happen during the stop, even if it was just a minor offense.
Or it could be no offense. There's a ingrained, unfortunately, and I can speak for myself, unfortunately, there's an ingrained slight paranoia, uncomfortableness when you see those lights or that police car behind you, and you start to, you know, get yourself together and make sure, like, are them lights going to pop on? You know, let me go a little slower. Let me try to get to the, you know, to the right. And so we have that in there. So there's a inherent mistrust. And I think it, to me, it's just, and I'm just going to speak generally. It's like, we'll say the power structure. Mm-hmm. The power structure has to reach out. We shouldn't have to reach out and fix the relationship.
Absolutely.
But the people in charge should have to reach out and say, like, hey, I want these citizens to feel comfortable. We're not here to persecute a certain group. First, you have to really believe that.
Right.
And then if you do believe that, then you have to take action. And some police departments are doing it. I will say this week, they had the Kona event with the, you know,
Kona with the cops.
Kona with the cops.
Yes, and Kona Ice.
Yes, Kona Ice, the snow cones. And they wanted the community to come out, and it was free. The community to come out to engage the police and try to get to know who your local police officers are, which is the type of event. But that's just a surface event. But continue on like that to know who these police are, that we are. We are people, they're people, and let's build a relationship and get police officers who serve with integrity. And also, and going back to the quarterly meeting, trying to get diversity in the police. And, you know, because the state police gentleman spoke at the quarterly meeting. I do think that maybe there should be more reaching out, as opposed to, hey, we need you to be able to swim and pass the test.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is there.
Right. With that, one of the things that is our responsibility is to hold them accountable. Hold the police accountable for when they do wrong. So one thing that I learned about at the Salvation and Social Justice event is Newark, New Jersey, has a model for a civilian complaint review board.
Yes.
So when civilians have complaints about police use of force or improper conduct, misconduct, it goes before a citizen review board, which I think is so important, especially in communities of color, where we have representation by ourselves and from our peers to be able to address the situations that we're facing. So if this is something that is a problem in your community, check out Newark's civilian complaint review process and try to work with your local police district or precinct to implement some of those programs, and you know, just as a monitoring, it's about accountability. Yeah. Really,
you know, hey, people have a tendency to protect their own kind,
right?
So if the police shouldn't be monitoring the police, you know, I understand you have internal affairs and those type of things, but oftentimes things are swept under the rug or can be. You know, I don't, allegedly, they can't be swept under the rug. But if you have citizens who are looking at these issues, who have no ties, they can justly determine if there has been any malfeasance or something
right.
that has happened that shouldn't have happened, or, you know, justice was administered unfairly.
Right.
So, yeah, all these type of, as you were saying, these type of groups, our groups, our demographics should have these things to make sure when there is an issue or an event that it can be reviewed independently outside
right.
to make that determination.
Yeah, no doubt. 100% on board with that. So, I mean, that's something that we even need to look at within Burlington County. So.
Definitely.
We'll add that to the list of work and things that we need to address.
Yes.
Yeah. So lastly, you want to roll right into economic development.
And you know that.
You know that.
Word. So yeah, one of the things that we discussed in detail at our state quarterly conference was the issue of economic development. And nationally, there is a 1 million jobs campaign in the NAACP. It is initiated by Scott X. Estale from Connecticut, national board member.
Oh.
So it's a 1 million jobs campaign. Here in New Jersey, I think we have about 2% of the black population. So we're, you know, we're going to hold ourselves to 2% of those 1 million jobs. And our state kickoff will be taking place in Camden.
Can you explain that 2%? What are you referring to?
Oh, 2% of the million jobs. So the percentage per state, you know, the state's benchmark of how many of the million jobs that they're looking for in this million jobs, this national million jobs campaign, should be proportionate to the minority population in your state. So here in New Jersey, we got about 2%, which would lead to 2% of those million jobs. So that's what we're going for here.
Was this concentration of jobs in Camden?
So the state initiative is going to kick off in Camden. And I think because Camden has really been a hub of redevelopment lately, it's a site of gentrification as well. And with the new development, the new companies and industries that are coming to Camden, it is a prime spot to make sure that there is a portion of those new jobs that are being earmarked for local residents, which only makes sense. You can't bring all these companies and industries to an area and forget about the people that have spent their lives there, you know, only creating jobs for people who do not live there currently, for people who they hope to attract. So I think this is a really important initiative. Thank you, Scott, for putting this forward. And actually, we hope to get Scott on the next episode to talk a little bit more about it. I think that would be awesome if we can get him on.
Oh, I definitely. You know, and had we planned a little earlier, we could have got him on for this episode. But that's a campaign that's going to be continuing, so we can reach out and have him go into detail about
the inner workings of the Million Jobs campaign.
Yeah, they had a kickoff April 27th in Connecticut, and Judge Mathis was the keynote speaker. So he's signed on to the campaign as well, and I think this is an awesome initiative, and I look forward to working more with the state on how we can increase our job creation locally.
Yes, and shout out to President Richard Smith for reaching out to the companies and the power brokers to try to negotiate these jobs, try to bring these jobs to the Camden area, and, you know, allow them to be available.
Yeah, there's a meeting, I believe, that's scheduled with some of the hiring managers, CEOs of the companies, to really talk about the logistics and the numbers behind how many jobs should be available and earmarked for the community. So that'll help us to figure out where we are in our state creation of jobs for our communities.
Definitely.
Yep. Here comes the part in the program where we do what you're reading. So, Will.
Oh, snap.
What you been reading lately? What are you reading?
I haven't been reading anything recently that I can pull up. Yeah, nothing. I'm listening to a lot of podcasts.
So, what you listening to?
Well, the NPR Politics podcast. Mm-hmm. You see that's kind of my go-to. Reveal, they have a lot of things on that one. A lot of the NPR things, that's what. Right. What did This American Life, that's Snap Judgment. Snap Judgment's my joint.
Revisionist History is back, my jam.
Since they, was off that season, I think I deleted it. I got to bring it back in my playlist.
Yeah, they just started up. It's really good.
Okay. Malcolm Gladwell, is that?
Yes.
Gentleman? Yes.
Malcolm Gladwell. Definitely. Shout out to Malcolm.
Yeah, we try to be like you on a production tip.
So for me, I just finished my grad school program. So now I actually have some time. Clap up for that. So now finally I have some time to do some reading for leisure. Figure that.
Well, first, what was the discipline in grad school? Because these people don't know.
You're right. The people don't know. So I just finished a master's program at the University of Pennsylvania in city planning. So I have my MCP with a focus and a concentration in community and economic development. So I am really looking forward to bringing those skills to the community and adding that to our toolbox.
Great.
Yeah.
You're going to grab the mic and be MCP.
Yeah. Okay. I told my brother, I was like, you could call me Master President Councilwoman now. anyway, so I read this book called Homegoing by Ya Gyasi. Amazing, amazing story of two sisters. Ta-Nehisi Coates called it inspirational. Called it an inspiration, man. But it really was. It's about two sisters who don't know about each other and are separated. One gets sold into slavery and the other marries a white Englishman. So just the story of the sisters, and then it goes on past them generations down and shows what happens, what courses those two branches of the family take because of that one difference.
Yeah.
So it's really amazing, really, really awesome book, and I would recommend it. So make sure you go pick that up. Great job, Ya Gyasi. Homegoing.
Yeah, maybe I'll look into that.
It's on audiobook too.
Oh, that's even easier.
Yeah.
My reading. I'm questionable. Okay, maybe I'll do that.
All right.
Yeah, reading the NAACP bylaws. That's where I'm at.
Get through those bylaws, dang it. I know it's hard reading, but yo, the bylaws are the foundation of our organization. Make sure you know them. Shout out to Joyce Melanaw of New Jersey, because that woman is an inspiration. She knows those bylaws like the back of her hand. So, Joyce, shout out to you. Fist up. I'm trying to be like you and have those bylaws on deck. According to the bylaws. So, shout out to everyone listening. Thank y'all for joining us tonight. We did take quite a hiatus, but there was a lot of things going on. There was elections and graduations and life in general. Our bad, but we back.
Yes.
Thank y'all for listening, and we'll see you next time. Stay in the fight.
Peace.